Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 417 for comics originally released on August 5th, 2015. Now, starting us off in DC is Midnighter number 3. This is one that I read this morning, but last night I read number 2. I'm at that point where I'm still catching up on books, so I tried not to read them back-to-back so they wouldn't blur together, and I'm glad I didn't read them back-to-back. Because this one has a narrative technique where they're jumping around in time. This is now, this is yesterday, this is tomorrow, this is a few hours ago, this is a little bit later, that kind of a thing. And not counting regular kind of scene changes that might involve a slight jump forward in time or whatever, not including those, there were 6 time jumps backwards or forwards during this issue. And for me, I mean, I'm liking what they're doing here, but those time jumps didn't help the story for me. It felt like they were trying to cover up some weaknesses in the story. All it did for me was kind of convolute the story needlessly. And if the time jumps are done such that they reveal information in a useful or humorous way, I can go with that. But this issue takes place just literally on the heels of the previous one. Matter of fact, the opening scene overlaps with the ending scene of the previous issue. And I'm not convinced that the events that happen prior to now in this issue sync with what had happened kind of in the bizarre timeline of the previous issue, which also had some of those time jumps. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. I didn't check because I didn't care that much, but I think they've got a cool character here. I think they've got a lot of story potential to work with, and I think they could have and kind of should have just told the story in a straightforward linear fashion. I think they would have done fine, but that's also kind of a hot button issue for me, where whenever I see that sort of narrative technique, it just raises a red flag for me, making me think, are they trying to hide something? And if so, what? But this one, the time jumping was so frequent that just trying to put the story into a linear context, I didn't feel the need to do that. And that kind of annoyed me too. But I kind of liked what they were trying to do.
Yeah, I can see that, because there was some cool stuff in here. I like this character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like his attitude. I like his take on bad guys, and he's just amped up a little bit. You know, he's going to take them out, and I really like the fact that he's fighting for good, and you know, you can see like his interaction with the lady at the front door who lost her sister, maybe? I can't remember now. When he says they took her daughter. He's going to go find the people that took her daughter and beat her inventively and repeatedly. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
And it's a really cool little comic moment there with that exchange that they have. But yeah, so I think Steve Orlando, who's doing the writing here, is kind of finding his feet. And he's playing with some things, and I didn't realize it was 6 time jumps. But I did realize we jumped around a little bit, and I'm not sure if we needed to do that many times. I did enjoy the stuff with his relationship as well, you know, and the back and forth between him and his boyfriend or whatever. I thought that was nice to continue that relationship, and that didn't just get like sloughed away.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of cool, and then it's a very big distinct line between him at home and him on the job, you know.
Oh yeah,
it's very distinct, and so for that it really works to show that difference, and it's very stark, and you know, he's just a guy, you know, in a relationship trying to do the best he can, and then he brings the heat on the other when after the bad guys. So that's really kind of cool. And it, two very different characters, but it's the same person. And for that, I thought the jumps worked because it really kind of hit that home.
Well, and
the art by, is it Aiko? Would you say that's how you pronounce his name?
The font they chose for the credits on the inside, it is Aiko. It's clearer on the cover than the font for the credits on the inside.
Yeah, and I think his art is good. I think it's pretty good art, and I enjoy it, and it's kind of inventive in places, and I don't think I know him from anything else, but all in all, there's a lot of good stuff here. But I do, yeah, there are some jumps that maybe one or two too many.
Well, they convoluted the story more than they needed to. There are a couple of visual storytelling techniques, like when Midnighter is in the daughter's, Amanda's apartment, or her bedroom, I mean, and we've got what he's kind of keying in on. And I thought that was a nice thing. But they do that in a few other places, and it's like, okay, they're trying to change kind of the visual vocabulary of comics a little, which is good, but that you add the time jumps in there, and it's like, just make this a little bit more straightforward in a couple of places, guys. Then we could really enjoy some of these visual things when they come. First, no, wait, where are we at again? What's going on? Did we just jump in time? Backwards, forwards, left, right? What's going on?
And there's that cameo by a major DC character that I did not see coming.
I'm looking forward to that because presumably that character will guest star next issue.
Yeah.
And I think that's if not, it's like, come on, don't tease us like that. That's mean. One of the things you mentioned, though, was Midnighter's relationship. And I think that is a key part of this book and a very smart move for them to put in. Because they took what could be considered just a ripoff of Batman and made him a very different character. Batman's a loner. This guy has relationships and stuff. This guy, even more assertive than Batman in many respects. And certainly the way his mind works, very different than Batman. But, I mean, similar, because, I mean, that's where the Midnighter character kind of came from. But I like how it doesn't just read like another Batman book. It's got its own flavor, style, and personality to it. Just as a side note, the big fight scene he's got with the superpowered guy, which apparently seems to all happen pretty much either off-panel or somewhere, you know, jumping backwards and forwards in this thing. It's hard to keep track if it's actually in here or not. That was Multiplex, who is originally was a Firestorm villain. Oh. Firestorm was the fusion of two people. This guy was kind of Firestorm's opposite number, and he kind of split out into clones. Now, pre-Flashpoint, the clones got smaller as he made more, because he had just finite mass to split across them or whatever. Here, seems to work a little bit differently. This character also showed up in early episode of The Flash, Season 1 TV show. So I thought it was a fun little cameo for a villain or whatever.
Yeah, very cool.
Again, I like what they're trying to do here. Certain parts of it are working better for me than other parts. If they were to not have the jumping around in time and convolute the story that way, I think it'd work a lot better for me. As it was, I'm enjoying it, and the fact that they made it feel different from Batman definitely helps it a lot, in my opinion. I'm a big Batman fan, too, but make him his own character, which they've done. I went with a B-. I think it's good, but I want it to be better.
Yeah, I was half a grade higher than you. I'm going to B. I thought it was a good comic. I enjoyed it. I think the guys got some really good stuff here. There's enough character building that the character is someone that I want to read more about. And that's good. That's a win. So I'm still in the book.
The other thing for me that is a sign of good writing is they haven't told us a lot about this person that Midnighter's now in a relationship with, but I don't trust that person.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. I expect that to be kind of something that happens maybe in issue 6 or something, figuring it's a 6-issue arc, but maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Don't know. Mm-hmm. So shall we move on to our Marvel book?
I suppose.
You sound oh so enthused.
That was a tough one for me, man.
This is Age of Apocalypse number 2. It is written by Fabian Nicieza, and Gerardo Sandoval is doing the art. Age of Apocalypse, at least one of the more memorable eras of the X-Men titles. I think Fabian was working on them at the time. I could be wrong on that. This one had a ton of narration in the form of captions and stuff, kind of a voiceover by Doug Ramsey, Cypher of the New Mutants, and not a big fan of heavy voiceover narration in comics. It's almost like instead of telling a story, it's more of an illustrated story at that point with, you know, you get a panel of art and then paragraphs of text or whatever. It wasn't quite that bad, but it felt that way probably more than it was, with a lot of splash pages and stuff like that. And it does a good job of capturing kind of the Age of Apocalypse universe and kind of converting it into a domain inside of Battleworld. But I'm two issues in, and I read the previous issue, the first issue, last night. I read this one this morning, and I'm still kind of confused as to why Cypher is so important in this domain or storyline. I mean, what's the deal with him? You know, I mean, I know who the character is. I know he's able to, you know, interpret languages and all sorts of other, you know, great and wonderful things, but why is everybody chasing him? What, I mean, it feels like the crux of the story, maybe I missed it, but I feel it hasn't been told. Did I miss it, or did you feel the same way on that?
Yeah, I didn't follow this at all. And the art is straight out of 90s Image, man. It's like really big, you know, the, who was the dude that was doing Cable? Was that Liefeld?
Liefeld?
Yeah.
Actually, it reminded me more of maybe Joe Madureira or Humberto Ramos.
Yeah, I got a definite Liefeld vibe from some of the big, muscular, oversized versions of these characters. And so that was kind of took me out of the story a little bit. And the story was boring. It just went on and on and on and prattled on and on. And, I don't know the original Age of Apocalypse, so that probably didn't help. Not my thing. Didn't work for me. I might be at my fill of mutants right now anyway. So
there is a lot of mutant activity titles going on in Secret Wars, and it does get a little confusing as to which era are these characters from, what's going on, what are the allegiances and stuff. For me, the art style, this sort of style can work great on some titles. Again, it worked well on a couple of Image titles back in the day. The Humberto Ramos style worked awesome on Impulse. But I don't think this style is really the best fit, and this is just my opinion, but for the X-Men. It's more kind of an in-your-face action. It's like, take a regular kind of static, I'm going to say boring, you know, comic art. Compare that to the more action style of like Jack Kirby with the foreshortening and just in-your-face. And take that up another couple of orders of magnitude. It's just overly dramatic, overly... not even sensationalized, but there's explosions. There's just all sorts of things happening. It shows you what it needs to show, but I think the storytelling could be clearer in both in the writing and in the art. There are a couple of panels. It's like, okay, something happened here, but it's in a big fight scene. Who was this? Why do I care? What's going on? To me, it was a swing and a miss. At best, it wasn't horrible. It wasn't one where I thought, geez, why did they publish this? But it possibly was highly evocative of the time period it was from, and that didn't help it, in my opinion, because I'm not going to say Age of Apocalypse was a high watermark necessarily for the X-Men books. I'm going to go with a C rating of just kind of smack dab there in terms of they did presumably what they set out to do. And again, it captures a certain style, time, and era of comics and does so well. Just not a time and era I particularly love or cared for. In terms of the art style, the narration, all that kind of stuff. But it's not one like I fell asleep while reading it.
Which is close to what happened to me. It was, you know, for me, it's either, you know, my enjoyment of the comic would have been a D. But I think I'll give it a C- because I don't know if I'm being entirely fair, because I don't have enough of the backstory, I guess, of this event that happened. So for sure, if somebody likes that event, this would probably connect with them more. But you know, I didn't like much of anything in it. Clearly below average to me, and just how much, I'll go with the C- on this.
I can see that. And I can see where, and again, having myself familiarity with the Age of Apocalypse previous event and stuff, I could at least understand what was going on, who the characters were, some of the where the backstory was from that event, where they differed from it and stuff like that, making it, I don't say more accessible to me, because that's the exact wrong word, but more understandable to me. They should have made it more accessible to everybody. Not something I would really say is a high watermark for the Secret Wars title or something that I think people ought to really go seek out. There are better titles and stuff to be had. I would probably point towards Years of Future Past, maybe is one of the better ones for the X-Men books out of Secret Wars, but there's so many to choose from. It's staggering. Shall we move on to our other book?
Yes.
This is Long Distance number 3 from IDW. It is written by Tom Zoller. It's art by Tom Zoller. It's letter by Tom Zoller. It's everything but the editing. He had David Hedgecock do that. And I have been a fan of Tom Zoller's work since I first encountered it. Probably, I think it was on Loving Capes. I've since chased down a few of his older works. Don't know that I've actually gone and read them yet, but this is a mini-series. It's a love story. It's about how Carter and Lee literally bump into each other at an airport, hit it off during a blizzard and stuff while their flights are delayed, and wind up having a long-distance relationship. And I read number 2 right before reading number 3 this morning, and on the one hand, glad I did that. On the other hand, man, there is a unbelievable amount of story in these issues. And not in a, geez, these things are dense, hard to get through. The exact opposite. It's something that, for me, just pulled me along through the story. It's a very enjoyable kind of slice of life, romance kind of a thing. And I don't really gravitate towards slice of life comics or romance comics or anything of the sort, but I got to know these characters. I got to care about these characters. Tom Zoller is just an excellent storyteller, both as a writer and an artist. He makes stuff accessible. He makes the scene changes crystal clear. It's effortless to follow this story and get sucked into the worlds of Carter and Lee as their relationship is playing out. This is one that I just found to be a lot of fun, very enjoyable, and just I was amazed. I think it took me maybe 20 minutes to read this comic. And I'm a reasonably fast reader, but there is just so much happening in here without any of the pages feeling like it's just overwhelmed of, geez, this page is too packed, too many panels, or too many words. None of that. Again, effortless read. It's just there's so much wonderful story in here.
Yeah, this is amazing the way I'd only heard of Tom Zoller from his critically acclaimed Love and Capes, never read it. But that's the only thing I knew him from, is mm-hmm. just how well that was received. And I was going to read issue 1 and 2 before, and things got out of whack. I was like, I better just read 3 just so I know it's read for the show today.
Mm-hmm.
And so I read issue 3 and it was so wonderful. And it was three issues in, having not read issue 1 and 2. It was so wonderful the way it pulled me in. And these two characters are so lovable. And so, I mean, after finishing, I put it down and went back and read 1 and 2 because mm-hmm. I wasn't going to go to bed until I read them all. And it's a romantic comedy. It's very much in the vein of Fingerman's Minimum Wage. There's a little bit of the love story from Stray Bullets, Sunshine and Roses, of David Laufen book that's out now. There's a little bit of those things, but I think it's better than both of those. And I could definitely see this being made into, if it's not optioned already, it should be.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a perfect movie. It's a perfect romantic comedy. Drew Barrymore and somebody. I can definitely see this happening. And it's so good. I have a few nitpicks, but I still think this is great. You know, it's a $5 comic, but the dude does everything himself, and he gives you like 40 some pages. So I get it. It's worth it. But there is a hefty price tag. There's a lot of precious language. There are some times where the characters are almost too clever. It's like an episode of West Wing or something that, like, who's the guy that either Aaron Sorkin or the guy that directed Avengers that used to do.
Oh, Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon type of, where everybody's really smart and has these great quips and just locked and loaded and ready to go. And you're like, come on, you know, nobody talks like that. And so there's a couple of those moments, but it's not enough to take you out of it. And the characters are so likable that you don't mind that.
Mm-hmm.
And those are just my nitpicks. Other than that, this thing is just wonderful. it was an issue three, and I loved it so much. It made me go back, and I didn't need to, because it was did such a good job of pulling me into the story and making me like it. So I wouldn't have needed to go back to issue one and two, but I did because it was so good. And now I'm going to go hunt down Love and Capes because I've got to read more of his stuff because it's so good. He has an effortless way of writing dialogue and capturing what, for this story, what it is to be in love in the early days. Mm-hmm. Those early days of being in a relationship and wanting so much to spend time with that person. And sometimes you can't. And he just nails it. And you forget, those of us that have been married for a long time, you forget what that feeling was like. And this is a really awesome way to kind of, oh yeah, I remember those early days and how we were like that. And, you know, your dates would last for 2 days. They would just go on and on and on because you wouldn't want to stop hanging out together. And the conversations that you had, it was just, I mean, it just nails it. It's so real. It's so well drawn. I love the cartooning. The cartooning style is really cool. Characters are so distinct, easy to tell apart. I mean, I really like his best friend. I like her best friend. I like her mean, I understand her, who her mean boss is. There's so many really strong characters that are peppered throughout here. Great supporting cast. I mean, this is something that I can't wait to see how it ends up. It's going to be great in trade.
Yeah.
This will be a trade that you pick up and you won't put down until you're done. You'll get sucked into that first issue and you'll want to go on their dates with them until the end.
Well, it's also the kind of trade you pick up and give to people. You want to see what comics can do. This is an excellent example.
Yeah. You want to, yeah. This is a great gateway comic. Yeah. This is how the storytelling medium can be elevated through this story. And this would be a great book to give to anybody.
Part of what I liked about this is not only is the relationship stuff solid, but the workplace dialogue and stuff like that, the way that people are acting there, it feels very real and something that it's got a honesty to it, I guess is the word I want to use there.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it's put on or it's like, ooh, this would be a clever little thing. Again, this is something that, again, romantic comedy, whatever, perfect movie potential. And I would love to see it if they can get the right cast. And I don't know exactly who that would be, and I think there are lots of options. But if they can get a good cast that's got the right chemistry, they've got the storyboards right here.
Exactly.
This is just film it the way this is.
Shoot it frame for frame, and it'd be perfect.
Yeah. I mean, this is something that Tom Zoller should be very proud of. He has done just phenomenal work in everything I've read. I've talked with him a number of times at San Diego, at C2E2 and whatnot. He's just an awesome guy, and he's definitely a geek, as is clear from some of the dialogue in, I think it was issue two or whatever, when they're dating in Chicago and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You just get snippets of conversation. It's like I can pretty much fill in the rest. At this point, they're talking about Stargate. At this point, they're talking about that, whatever.
Yeah, there were a couple uber geeky conversations that I kind of checked out on. But I don't think it wasn't enough to take you out of it because there were a couple that I just did not pick up on the references.
But even if you don't, you know that those characters are sinking on a reference.
Yeah.
They've got a point in common. They're good.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and just like in a romantic comedy, there's a little suspension of disbelief where you're like, really? This guy owns his own ad agency. She's a rocket scientist. Really? These two are going to meet? And be so much alike and they're really going to like all the same shows. Is that even possible? But you quickly shove that aside and just kind of hang out with them. And it's really great.
I guess for me, I've either seen or more likely heard about enough such movies and stuff. Cause my sister watches some of this and tells me about them or whatever. It's like, I am sure that you could at almost any point in time between the Hallmark Channel, ABC Family, and I don't know what other channels, but channels of that sort.
Yeah.
Probably at any point in time, flip the dial, turn to one of those, and find a movie of this ilk, but probably not as well done.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it's I thought these were fun characters. I enjoyed spending time in this world. And again, I don't normally gravitate towards either the slice of life type stuff or the romance stuff or whatever. More superheroes, action, adventure, sci-fi, whatever. But this was just, these are fun characters to hang out with, a fun world to be in. And Tom Zoller is just an outstanding storyteller.
Does he do all his work for IDW?
He used to have his own company.
Okay.
He used to self-publish with Love and Capes. Did that for, it was a quarterly series initially, and he gave the issue that came out for Free Comic Book Day, he gave that out for free every year. So he was essentially doing three paid issues and a free for a couple of years. Did a five-issue limited series for Love and Capes when he moved it to IDW, and his this is the thing he's done after that, I think. He's done one or two other things, maybe, I want to say My Little Pony, maybe?
He's not a full-time comic creator, then.
I am not sure, to be honest. He may or may not be.
Yeah. I mean, sounds like if he's doing three paid issues and giving one away, that'd be tough to make the bills, wouldn't it?
For all I know, he is the art director at, like, an ad agency he owns with a friend.
and I could see that. And yeah, this is great, man. I mean, I think everybody should read this. I can't think of anyone that wouldn't enjoy this if you like comics. It's just great. It's just wonderful. I gave it an A. Didn't get the A plus just because I had a few nitpicks, but it's an A comic.
All the things you had mentioned as the nitpicks you have voiced so far didn't faze me in the least. I thought this was wonderful. I loved both issues I read back to back. I loved the first issue. All of them, I would say, are 5 out of 5s, A plus, top of the stack, whatever you want to say.
Mm-hmm.
This is how comics ought to be done. I would love to see Tom Zoller do things in other genres and apply his story sensibilities and storytelling techniques and stuff to superheroes, action, adventure, time travel, sci-fi, mystery, whatever. If he is the creator on it, it's, unless it's a concept that I just despise for some crazy reason or whatnot, he gets, I was going to say the benefit of the doubt, but there is no doubt. I know this guy is incredibly talented. He's doing something, odds are I'm picking it up.
Yeah, and now me too. So I got to thank you again for recommending, hey, Drew, let's read a romance comic for next week's show. And I said, oh, gosh, here we go. But this was great. And now I want to read more of his stuff. I got to thank you. This is awesome.
I'm glad you enjoyed it and stuff. And I'm glad that you were able to dive into the third issue,
Find
it completely accessible and enjoyable, and wanted to read 1 and 2, not feeling like, oh, crap, I've got to go read that to understand it.
No, didn't. Wouldn't have had to. Could have just picked up and moved on, which is, you know, like you did in the old days when you just grabbed something off the spinner rack, 372, and just kept going. You didn't have the option of going back. But this, I mean, it was great. It was just a really great comic. And it's only a 4-issue miniseries. So to be able to capture that in a third issue and just suck you in, and it was just a great, great job. Awesome.
I've had some wonderful discussions with him at various conventions about storytelling, about what he thinks is going right and wrong at different companies, and just sharing our views and stuff. And he's just really got a good sense of story, of storytelling, and understands the business side of things too. So it's not like he's just completely pie in the sky type stuff. He gets why issues have to be accessible, and it shows in his work. So highly, highly recommend any and all of his work you can get your hands on.
And his art is cool.
Yeah. He's got a nice kind of cartoony anime style. Not anime, but animated.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of. It's a deceptively simple looking style.
Yes.
Yeah, just spot on his use again of the colors as the scenes, as you switch from one scene to another, that sort of a deal. And again, he's doing all of it, including the lettering and stuff himself. As a matter of fact, I think he's done lettering for other comics.
And there was a great panel in there where he draws a cartoon version of the two of them on a date,
mm-hmm,
and gives it to her. And it's like just like a panel of the comic because it's the same style. And you're like, yeah, duh, of course it is.
Yeah,
because this is the interpretation of that relationship. And I thought that was just really awesome because, he could have changed that to a different style to make it look like it was out of not the same as the art, but he kept it the same and it worked. There's some really great touches in here and some really great panels and great pages, great comics. Awesome. I should give it an A+.
You gonna switch? You gonna stay with the A?
I'm gonna push all my nitpicks away. Because I don't rave about comics like this very often, and it's an A+.
All right. My only regret with this is not having read the first issue before San Diego, so I could have talked to Tom Zoller about it then and there. I am real curious how much, if any, of this is autobiographical. It just, at the very least, he really pays attention when he's out in public listening to people talk and how they interact, because he captures that just so well.
If it's not autobiographical, it's amazing how he can put this much care into these characters if they're just figments of his imagination.
He did the same sort of a thing, which I think was much more figments of his imagination and stuff, or a highly idealized version of his life, in Love and Capes.
Yeah.
But I do want to see him do a lot more stuff, and like I said, I'd like to see him play in some other genres just to see what he can do there.
I might even read that My Little Pony that he did. Maybe.
So I am still behind on my reading. I am slowly catching up. I am now within the week of July 22nd. And okay. I've read some of that stuff.
You're getting there.
I'm getting there. So I've only got that week, the following week, and then the week we're on. And I've, like I said, I've read a couple of things here and there. So I think I'm somewhere around 80 or 90 comics to read. I did read Fables 150. And
oh, was it a trade?
That was the trade. And very satisfying conclusion to that series. And just talk about a crazy amount of story under one cover kind of a thing. Granted, it cheated because it was a full trade. But I'm glad they ended that series on a high note in terms of just quality output. And the final issue being the final trade was just kind of cool.
Now, I'm reading Fables, The Wolf Among Us. Am I reading a prequel or a post?
Prequel.
Prequel, okay.
And I'm reading that too. I think I may be an issue or two behind on the print side.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I've been slowly chipping away at stuff. I've got, because this past weekend I had the number crunching. I had the preview spotlight to do. I went down to San Antonio for a convention. So we'll have more episodes coming up, a convention episode, a previews episode, which will be the episode after this, and the Mayo reports when I get around to recording them.
There was a San Antonio convention? Was it a Wizard World?
No, this was Texas Comic Con.
Huh.
So just a small local thing. I think it's its fifth year. We were able to get my sister and I press passes, and I live on the San Antonio side of Austin, so it's not like we had to go through either city and stuff, so that wasn't too bad. We had a bit of an adventure, one or two things that happened. Again, we recorded an episode that'll go up Friday for that. But if you've got a local convention or a local-ish convention, next city over and stuff, I really recommend checking them out, because you can get a feel for what the local geek community is like, what they're interested in, and particularly if you've just moved to a place, it's a good way to find, you know, people with similar interests. So, but, you know, this coming week I've got couple of episodes to record on the Mayo Report, that kind of stuff. So I'm hoping to, now that I'm down to less than a short mm-hmm. box, to keep it that way.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a little bit of a challenge.
So you did you like the Ant-Man annual?
I did. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good.
The ending I liked, I'm curious about. I don't know where to go find out more. It's the kind of thing that maybe they have no immediate plans, but if they do, tell me where to go so I could check it out.
Did we already touch on Hawkeye 22?
No, we have not touched on that.
Yeah, so the long-awaited finale. You read that one.
I read that one. I have not read All New Hawkeye number 4 that came out the week after, though. But the previous Hawkeye series that ended was good, but it was one of those where the delays really kind of hurt the story momentum some.
Mm-hmm.
It's one that I think that series will be better respected and liked in trade, just because you don't have these interminable waits. They didn't get that many issues out over the course of the past year on that one. And they were good when they finally came, but when you're doing chapters versus full issues, it can be hard to get back into the story and hard to really enjoy it.
Yeah. Now, Moon Knight number 17, Is that the final issue? Could you tell? I mean, I know it's not solicited anymore, but did that feel final to you?
Not the last one I read. Let me see if the last one I read was that issue, because, like I said, I'm still slightly behind on my reading.
I think that was the 15th, the week of the 15th.
I think I have read it, and
it was like in a church, and there were like some homeless
people
that were getting...
I was thinking there was going to be another issue. I couldn't tell. With Marvel these days, particularly the titles that have not been kind of sucked into the Secret Wars stuff, it's hard to tell. Really, with any Marvel book, it's hard to tell how many issues it has left. But the fact they've got a couple still going on, even though the world doesn't exist anymore, just a little confusing.
Yeah. Did you read Mercury Heat from Avatar?
No, did not get that. I don't tend to read that much from Avatar.
Yeah.
It's
pretty tame. It's pretty tame, but you know, you would never, you know, it's a roll of the dice on an Avatar press book, you know, whether it's going to be a tame book or not.
I gave up on God is Dead because it was by no means tame, and I think I've only read maybe one or two other series from them. They just tend to be a little bit harder core, a little bit more gory and graphic on the violence and stuff than I care for at all.
Mm-hmm.
They do good work. They seem to tell good stories. It's just the stories they choose to tell are ones I choose not to read.
Yeah.
But that's just my sensibilities.
Another Astro City was pretty good. Coming off the two-parter about Styx, this was like a, I think the name was Mockingbird or something like that. Hummingbird.
Oh, right. The one with the bird. Yes, I liked that.
Yeah, it was good.
Astro City, am I going to like it? Yeah, just about always.
Just about every single time. And that fourth issue of Secret Six I thought was good.
I'm still on the fence on Secret Six. And again, that's another one where the story momentum kind of kills it. I think
they're riding the ship, though. I think it's coming out a little more regularly now, right?
It is, but 3 and 4 came out in pretty, you know, monthly succession or whatever, but there was like a 4-month gap since the second issue.
Yeah.
And I felt there was a definite change from where issue 2 was to where issue 3 started. And with, you know, convergence in between the other delays and stuff, it felt a little awkward to me. It's not bad, but it hasn't really hit its stride just yet. And I'm not sure what direction where they're going with it.
Did you say you're all the way through the 22nd, or you're halfway through?
I have started the 22nd. That's the next week I've got to plow through, so I have not read all of those.
Okay.
I am through the 15th.
Gotcha.
I am into the 22nd is what I should have said.
I gotcha.
Yeah, like I said, I've got 80 or 90 comics across the last this week and the previous two to get through.
Do they all blur together for you, or are you able to kind of pull? Seems like you're able to just kind of pick and choose out of whatever you've read. That's good.
It really depends on the comics. There are a couple that blur together because they're so similar, such as Guardians Team Up number 8 and Groot number whatever just came out.
Mm-hmm.
Both of which, Groot number 3, both of which involve Groot teaming up with the Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
And it's like really on back-to-back weeks. It's not that it's a bad concept or a bad team up, but space it out a little, or at least have the two teams, creative teams, a little bit more in sync, because it felt like in one, it felt like the relationship between the two characters was a little bit different in the two books. Not jarringly so, not you've got to be kidding me so, but enough to that I noticed. And it didn't feel like it needed to be the two books so close together.
The Walking Dead did it again with another great reveal.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, I'm trying to stay current on a couple of books like Walking Dead and whatnot. For me, the big thing with Kirkman is he's had such success with The Walking Dead, doing fairly well on a number of his other books, but Invincible just hasn't really, while it's still going, it hasn't really clicked with a wider audience like some of his other stuff has, which is leading up to the solicit for 124 where it reboots the book. And I'm going to be real curious how that does. And I trust Kirkman to have a good game plan and to execute on it well. I just don't know how well that kind of a reboot he's planning is going to be received.
Well, after the 111 first, you know, kind of stealth jumping on deal that he was doing and all that hype, I don't know how many more chances he's going to get.
I I'm seeing this as a chance to rejuvenate the title or go through another arc or two and then kill it.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong on that. And it's not like it's selling so bad he has to kill it. That's not the case at all. But he's only got, you know, so many hours in the day, and there are clearly other things that he could be more successful with.
Another one of those SWA titles that I kind of like is 1872.
Yeah, and read the first issue of that.
That first issue was really good, surprising, too. I don't usually like Jerry Duggan stuff, but it was good. I was surprised how good that was. Did you read Civil War then? Did you like it?
I read the first issue. Very different from the previous event, but it was good. It was interesting. Ended on a strong note. I had a couple of questions about certain characters' status quo and how that got to be where it was at. It frustrates me a little that they're using the names of past stories and events, yet this story they're doing for Secret Wars under those brands and those titles is in some cases very, very different. In this case, they turned Civil War into a very literal civil war and split the U.S. in half.
Okay.
And there was nothing of the sort like it. It was more of a conceptual civil war in ideology in the old event series.
Okay.
But they went from, well, what if that had happened a little bit different and then moved forward to how they got here? You know, as if it were a parallel world that went on a similar but not identical path.
Okay.
It was fun. It was good.
Now, I enjoy Amazing Spider-Man when it's a real title. And so would I like Spider-Verse, Spider-Island, or Spider-Man Renew Your Vows, or none of the above, or all of the above?
Oh, man, that's a tough call.
Because I'm enjoying Slott's run from Superior to now. I've enjoyed most of it. And I want to know if I should pick up any of these SWA titles to kind of... I think Slott is writing Renew Your Vows, correct?
I've gotten a little confused on who's writing which ones right now, because I'm reading so many in kind of rapid succession. And Spider-Island, Spider-Verse are kind of blurring a little for me. Spider-Verse is dealing with a half dozen Spider-Man-ish characters, and I'm enjoying it. Spider-Island, if I'm recalling correctly, not as good, but I've only read the first issue of that one.
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Man Renew Your Vows, I was hoping for a little bit more of an MC2 influence on it than we're getting. But ironically enough, we're getting more of that, I think, in Spider-Verse. So I would say at this point, whichever one Slott's writing, hard to go wrong with that. But really, your best hope is the new Amazing Spider-Man number one when it comes out after Secret Wars.
Okay. Now, how about the Critter reboot?
You know, Aspen having taken over or absorbed or bought out or whatever exactly happened, Big Dog Inc., I think was a good thing. Big Dog Inc., I've been a fan of for years. I think Tom Hutchinson and his crew are doing some great work. But when they relaunched their titles through Aspen, they didn't reboot the titles. They didn't relaunch or restart or whatever the titles. They remastered them. So what that means is the Critter number one we got is predominantly the Critter number one I read when Big Dog Inc. first did it a couple of years ago.
Wow.
Now, I'd have to get the two side by side to really know what the differences are and where they kind of remastered and improved or whatever. But these are coming out saying it's from Aspen and it's a second printing. Now, as far as I know, they're not doing a second printing, first printing for the current one, but it's kind of treating this as a second printing of the first one that was done by Big Dog. But they were kind of in an odd situation where I don't know that Big Dog had enough of a market presence and penetration for people to just pick up where it had left off. I think they kind of had to do this. But it's, as somebody who had been a longtime supporter of Big Dog, it rubs me a little bit the wrong way. But I get why they had to do it. That kind of makes sense?
Yeah, I think so. Now, did you get Strange Fruit, the Boom book?
I did not, and I heard there was a bit of a ruckus or whatever about that, but I haven't even tracked down what the ruckus was about or what the talk was about. I know it's a Mark Waid book, but that's all I know.
Yeah, it deals with kind of race relations, and it's very timely for all the stuff that's going on with the Confederate flag and all the racial tensions stuff that was happening recently. So it came out very timely for that. And I thought it was really good, and I really liked the art style. It's worth checking out. I enjoyed it a lot.
I'll see if I can track that down.
It's Boom. So
yeah,
might be able to get a
might be copy. Able to get the press copy. Yeah, I'll have to check that. Because I'm a big fan of Wade. The whole race stuff, I am completely against, you know, discrimination and judging people on race and stuff. Personally, I think it's for the lazy. If you want to hate somebody, just get to know them. But to me, this whole thing has gotten to complete ludicrousness, and it's a serious issue, and I'm not trying to downplay that at all. But when they decided, I think it was TV Land decided to stop airing the Dukes of Hazzard because of the use of the Confederate flag.
Yeah, that was kind of silly.
That show is not the least bit racist whatsoever. It's set in the South. It's got, you know, Hicks or, you know, whatever you want to, you know, the country folk, if you will. But it's a fun, lighthearted show. And if people are that serious about a flag, I mean, I get the flag has certain connotations and whatnot. And I get what the flag stood for with the Confederacy, with slavery and all of that. Yeah, completely bad. That should get shot down and none of that. All in agreement there. But there comes a point where do we draw these lines and where do things just get a little out of hand? So I'm curious now about the Strange Fruit stuff and kind of Mark Waid's take on the whole race relations and stuff.
Good first issue. We'll see where it goes.
Cool.
Yeah. That's I think that pretty much catches us up until you finish up your marathon reading session.
Again, it may be another week or two or three, but I'm trying to catch up as much as I can.
Yeah, it sounds like you're chipping away at it. So down in the 80s.
Yeah, just a lot of good stuff, a lot of reading, and having one or two weeks that were not huge recently in terms of new shipments helped a bit. It felt like for a little bit there I was just treading water, but I'm at least now to stuff that came out after Comic-Con.
So right.
That helps.
I saw the numbers came out this week, so you'll be recording some Mayo reports in the next week or so?
Yeah, I'll be recording with Sam between the time we're recording this and the time it goes up, and the day this goes up, I'm recording with TJ. So get those out, and should be fun. Should be some good conversations.
When does previews come out?
The previews episode will be the next episode to air after this.
Okay, so it'll be next Wednesday.
Ton of great solicits. Want to thank everybody for that. There was like an hour's worth of clips sent in.
Good.
Lot of great stuff. Added a couple of things to my list. I've still got to finalize my order and factor in all of the bundles from DCBS. And I need to... normally I would do that sort of a thing while editing the episode, but I've also noticed, like, I got two copies of the first two issues of Age of Apocalypse, and it's like, you know, I really don't need two copies. Even if I'd paid a little more attention when filling out my order, I wouldn't have gotten two copies. So I'm going to pay a little more attention when filling out my order, just to because it really cuts down on the advantage of these discounts to get an extra 10% if I then go waste it on a duplicate copy of a comic I don't need two copies of.
Yeah, if you're buying multiples accidentally, that kind of kills the 30% off.
Well, it's the additional 10, but the difference between the 40 and the 50 and stuff, it goes pretty quick, though. It's I have discovered I can reread the same comic. I don't do that often, but I have the technology. So, and I've got a couple of other episodes in the works. Again, the one on Texas Comic-Con. I've got another one that my sister and I have done that as soon as I can get this one edited, it's going to be probably about a 2.5-hour episode, I think, when it's all said and done or thereabouts. And I just trying to catch up on the reading, trying to do the number crunching. I just haven't had time to get some of that editing done.
Ooh.
So plenty of episodes coming up and more than enough to keep me busy. Anything else? Or does that pretty much do it?
Hey, I think that does it.
Cool.
Join us next time for DC Bombshells number 1 from DC, Secret Wars 2099 number 4 from Marvel, and Phonogram the Immaterial Girl number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.